of these self-organizing learning communities, and there are quite a number of self-organizing learning communities. I always remember a talk by Erin Brewer. She talked about self-organizing learning communities in Yahoo groups, and one of her examples was the community of beekeepers. And again, it's the same sort of structure, right? It's a bunch of people who have an interest in beekeeping, and it turns out you can't organize beekeepers either. And each one of them interacts with the rest of that particular group in their own way. Part of my thinking about online groups like this that has evolved a fair bit over the last year is trying to draw out the distinctions between groups and networks. And so I look at something like Webheads, I sort of ask myself, well, is it fit more of a network or does it fit more of a group? Is there a clear dividing line between being in the group and being out of the group? Are there certain conditions for being a member of the group or not being a member of the group? And so these sorts of things I look at, how open is the group? But again, this is all part of a long-term knowledge of Webheads and not this particular conference in particular. I know that was really vague.
Well, I think you've sort of put your finger on it, because the things that resound with me about when I listen to the things you say, which tend to re-say it, I would say, well, anyway, you emphasize the points often about knowledge and networks and distributed learning networks and this sort of thing, and I think that you may have just put your finger right on it. That is, it's not necessarily a group. We call ourselves a group. We have a Yahoo group, but it's not really a group. It's a network, exactly. And of course, it overlaps with many other networks. And World Bridges, for example, a very fascinating network. So it's the network aspects. And as George Stevens said the other, well, as he's written and said often, it's not the knowledge that's exchanged. It's the network that creates the possibility for the exchange of knowledge. That's the important thing. So I think that's, I think I'm reflecting now as I'm talking to you, so I appreciate that. On to the next question.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting just thinking about your comments there. You could even talk about your own personal identity as being defined, at least in part, in this way. Usually we think of our personal identity, we think of ourselves as, being about the properties of ourselves. I'm located in Canada, I'm 6 feet tall, I'm male, etc. But part of being who you are consists in the connections that you've made with various networks. And so part of being, say, me might be, for example, well, I'm doing this presentation at Webheads. I've interacted with eLearning Guild. I'm a member of Canadian Association for Distance Education. Those sorts of things define me just as surely as anything that I've done or anything that I am defines me. Of course, that was way off topic. Any other comments or questions? I'm looking at the chat room at the moment here.
And I'm going to check in with the Skype cast.
I love that. Way off topic equals messy. Yes, that's quite true. I heard another voice there.
That was the trial voice from someone in their Skype has a trial version of something.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Well, could I ask a logistical point? We have next up is Jeff LeBeau and Dave Cormier. And I presume, are we segging into this at this time?
We're still waiting for Dave to show up. So I think we can stay on for at least a few more minutes of post-show.
Okay, well, happily, as far as I'm concerned. Well, I'd like to hear more questions from the group.
And Vance, if you can, jiggle your microphone jack or something, because we're getting lots of static when you're speaking.
I'm really liking the discussion in the chat room, talking about messiness, but inclusive. The brain is a jungle is a pretty good one.
Have you ever taken a Myers-Briggs exam, Stephen?
Yeah, I have, actually.
What's your type?
And actually, this is consistent over a series of these tests. It's either INTP or INTJ. It tends to be INTJ when I'm at work and INTP when I'm at home.
Huh, I would have pegged you for a definite P.
No, because I'm a very logical person as well. So, I mean, I sit there, I'm a conclusion drawing machine from time to time. So, you know, I am one to leap to judgments. And it's right on the line, too. It's like, you know, when I'm at work, it's on the line P and J. And at home, it's on the line P and J. The others are like off the chart, INT, just off the chart in one direction.
Interesting. I'm pretty close on most of them, but very P. And people are suspecting Vance's P, I suspect, as well. It's judging or perceiving, and I guess it deals with kind of decision-making processes and how you... I don't know. I always think of people who have really neat rooms or tend to be J, and messy folks are P's.
I sort of think of the J as being logically minded, and the P as being sort of sensory minded. That's sort of how I think of it. Not sure how to explain that distinction. It's almost like this distinction between artificial intelligence and connectionism, right? The J is the symbolic, logical conclusions, and then the P is the connectionist, messy, there's something in there, but we don't know exactly what it is kind of thing.
Yeah, Nina says that J's keep to-do lists, and maybe P's make to-do lists, but then they lose them and can't find them.
Me, I plan to make to-do lists and then forget.
I have a question I'm dying to ask. I wanted to ask George this question, and I asked it of Timu, but he didn't really answer it. Can you simply characterize the difference between connectionism and connectivism?
Simply.
Yeah, simply, because it's beyond most of us.
Sure. I characterize it roughly as connectionism is a theory about information processing. In a sense, it's a theory about knowledge, but it's a theory about intelligence. And connectivism is a theory more about the pedagogy that follows from that, how people learn things in such an environment, how people know things in such an environment. And I'm not sure George agrees with that characterization, but that's my call on it. So connectionism is the thinking, connectivism is the learning. As you can tell, it's a pretty...
Still digesting, I think.
Yeah, it's a pretty narrow distinction.
Do you make a distinction... Oh, go ahead. No, I'll yield. Go ahead.
Okay. Kathy, did you have a comment or question?
Oh, yeah. And hold on a second. Let me turn this down. Okay, Stephen, how do you go from theory to practice? And how will this evolve into something that, you know, we're going to start seeing, you know, in higher education and so on?
That's a good question. That's a great question. I always like to say that what I'm doing online is the practice of the theory that I described. And if you look at what I do online, you see my website, you see my newsletter, you see the talks that I give, you see my participation in things like this, you see the notes that I take, the blog posts that I write, the occasional video that I do. All of these things constitute me engaging in the practice of being a node, if you will, in the learning network. I can just picture the t-shirts. I'm a node in the learning network. Anyhow, but or just, you know, just the t-shirt with the word node on it. Nobody would know. That's kind of funny, actually. I should make one of those.
Yes, you should.
So, and... You know, this, and you ask, well, how will we see this in the schools? We might not see this in the schools, to be honest. We might, but I'm not really counting on it. Mm-hmm. When I go to you know, people ask, well, how can I do this in my classroom? And I say, well, don't do it in your classroom. This isn't a theory about how your students learn. This is a theory about how you learn and what you should be doing. And so, you know, if you're a teacher in a classroom, say, I guess as opposed to the other kind, then the sort of thing that you should be doing is in some way attempting to have an online identity where that identity is present in a variety of online environments. These days, the choices are things like Facebook or MySpace or YouTube or Blogger, and there isn't really any center for that. There isn't any application to help you manage those, although those will be available very shortly, so you don't even need to worry too much about it. But the idea here is to have some sort of online presence. That presence is you distributed across the internet. That's how you will learn. That's how you will become a better teacher. And in doing this, you will model this practice, and your students, some of them, depending on their interests and background, will begin to pick up and model those behaviors themselves. But, you know, you can't just sort of stand in front of the classroom and say, you, student, have an online presence. It won't work like that.
Well, I guess I feel like I'm doing this, I'm starting to do this, and I do a lot in my classroom. One of the things I've noticed, though, is that the more connected I get online, the less connected I am with my, with my fellow teachers in my school who really are out of the loop, you know, and don't really want to be in the loop.
I'm not surprised by that. I think that's one of these things, like we're in a transition time right now. And some people will be out of the loop, and you know, they're never going to change. They will retire having never visited MySpace, and you can't fix that. There's nothing you can do about that. You just have to, in my view, you have to understand that we're in this time of transition. Some people are doing it the old way. Some people are doing it the new way. And, you know, if the new way is better, and that's still an if, it's always an if. If the new way is better, then gradually, as more and more people see it being done, more and more people will be doing it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's always this inclination to want to evangelize and proselytize and get out there and convert people. But it's not going to work that way. And you know, you can tell them about it, you can show them, you can model the behavior, but the other people still won't change. My take on that is, well, so long as they're not doing it, lots of people in my organization too don't, right? My take is, well, that gives me a big advantage. Because look at the knowledge that I get to work with. Look at the resources that I have on tap compared to them. They've got to wait for the journal article to come out. I mean, it just kills me. You know, like they're working on stuff that was written 4 years ago. I mean, a huge advantage. And as time goes by, people see I've got a huge advantage. And their first inclination is to say, oh, he must be really good or something like that. But really, it's just the way of doing things. It's not, has nothing to do with the individual, and they can do it too. And eventually they see that, some of them.
Well, I mean, one of the things that I see is that people have a certain personal learning style, and it may not adapt well to this online environment. Is that possible that some people will be excluded just based on, you know, how they interact with knowledge and people?
The short answer is yes. Mm-hmm. Just like, you know, the way some people are raised makes it difficult for them to read, or the way some people are raised makes it difficult for them to work in groups. Me, I hate group work. I cannot stand group work. Nothing I ever do will ever make me functional in small groups. It's just, and, you know, a lot of, the big difference between personal learning and traditional learning is that in personal learning, people need to take charge of their own learning and make decisions about their own learning, to be autonomous learners. And a lot of people, even today, don't have the educational background. They were never allowed to make these decisions. Their learning consisted of you know, 13 years of being told what to do.
Right.
And that's it for them. And, you know.
I was going to say, I think that's really key, and I think that's one thing we can do as teachers in our classrooms is to foster autonomy, even in the absolutely. Lowest levels.
Yes.
They have to make their own decisions and choices.
And
can I make a comment?
Sure,
I'd like to make
ahead.
A comment. Steve, this is Dave Cormier. First, I'd like to take issue with the fact that you don't work well in small groups, because it's not true. We had a very, very fine conversation not more than 4 days ago, which was a small group, which I think came up with very good conclusions. What I think a formalized, organized, traditional small group potentially is not something you work well in. Which brings me to my question. Are we talking about a new way of learning, or are we talking about getting around the artifacts?
Well, I lost that. Are we talking about a new way of learning, or
are we talking about going around the artifice that we've created around learning? Going back to the way that we've always learned.
You mean before this industrial model of learning was put
That's what I'm asking,
in
yeah.
the last century? Mm-hmm. You know, in a sense, yes, and in a sense, no. A lot of the structures are going to be similar. The apprenticeship, it was, a lot of hands-on, one-to-one kind of learning, and the technology is really going to enable that in the future. But, learning has always been about power and control. Even back in the days of Socrates and Plato, it was still like the instructor was the master, and the student was the grasshopper, and there would always be this power differential, and the student was always intended to follow the guidance of the master. In the apprenticeships, the student was practically owned by the master. So, and that's changing. We're not going to go back to that. If these tools are anything, they're empowering. And that means that when we have these one-to-one relations, when we have these master or apprentice situations, there's one person that could be called the teacher and another person that could be called the learner, but they interact with each other on a much more equal basis, on a much more egalitarian basis, with the understanding, and certainly this is the approach that I've always believed is the case, that the person who is doing the teaching is also doing as much learning as the person who's doing the learning. It's funny because, I do talks in at various places, and of course NRC says to me, why are you doing all these talks? We're not getting anything. You're just taking time out and going to weird and exotic places. And I try to explain to them that I learn so much when I do these things. Like even just the act of getting onto an airplane and going to Colombia or something like that, I learn a huge pile of things. But, when I go to a conference in Bogota, I interact with the people there, I think I learn more than they learn, personally. I think they end up being the teachers, and I end up very much being the learner. So there is this egalitarianism that is new. And I think that egalitarianism characterizes not only learning, but a wide range of relationships. That characterize society. It's the egalitarianism between newspaper reporter and reader, for example, has changed. The egalitarianism between politician and constituent. Across the board, these are changing, I think, for the better. I know, sometimes I end my sentences very suddenly.
Yeah, you're going to have to start sending us back channel messages.
Yeah, done now.
Trying to finish sentences now.
Yeah. But that would imply that I understood or I knew where the sentence was going when I started it. Yeah. That's just the thing with, like, French. I've, of course, been studying French. And in French, all your nouns have to agree with your verbs and all of that. So if you use the masculine gender at the beginning, you have to use the masculine gender at the ending and all of that. And the thing with French is, you have to know how your sentence is going to end in order to start it. Because if you use an adjective near the beginning of your sentence, it had better match the noun that you used at the end of your sentence. And I realized when I was learning French, I start a sentence without knowing where it's going. And so it makes it really hard for me to speak in French. And I find myself constrained. You know, as soon as I start my sentence, I wrote up half the possibilities in existence.
Actually, you shouldn't try Korean then, because there the verbs come at the end of the sentence. So you really have to know where you're going.
This is Jeff, and I'm wondering, I don't know if we're going to get to it today or not, but we have an Education Bridges town hall coming up, and Education Bridges, part of what it's working on is figuring out a way to get micro grants to people who are going to do good things with them. And I'm wondering how all this stuff you discuss plays out in terms of money, and how you see the economic system of education needing to evolve to incorporate all these changes that are happening.
My first reaction was, oh, yuck. No. First of all, like, don't let this session preempt what you have planned. I mean, if it's time to call an end to this session, just by all means do so. I'm in your hands and at your disposal here. Money. You know, I tell people the main reason that I'm in this field of online learning is that it will increase access to learning materials to people. It will create opportunities to people to learn at a fraction of the cost of what they're learning. And as time has gone by, I've realized more and more the importance of that. I've realized more and more the importance of having non-commercial and indeed free learning materials as opposed to commercial materials. And it's not just the affordability, although that's certainly part of it, it's part of the whole structure, but any learning material is a reflection of the process through which it was created. It's a reflection of the person who created it. As I tried to say, not necessarily successfully, at the CADE conference just last week, when we create something, when we create some sort of material, what we are is creating a projection of ourselves and sending it out over the internet. So if you think those my articles, those are little bits of me scattered over the internet, you know, the flat textual linear bits of me, but they're still bits of me. And so when learning materials are created through and as the result of a commercial process, which involves a financial transaction between the learner and the provider, the nature of the learning material itself changes. And it normalizes an imbalance of power between the provider and the learner. It creates the position in which the learner is, in a certain sense, subservient to or at the direction of the creator, and not in an educational sense, but in a control of resources sense. And this is the impact of DRM, right? If you think about it, it used to be, when we got a book, we bought a book, we took it home. Now I'm in complete control of the book. The book doesn't control me anymore. The author doesn't control me. If I want to turn to page 45, well, by gum, I'm going to do it, right? But DRM, the control remains in the hand of the author or the producer. So now when I'm trying to read this book, I'm going through this process of negotiation for permission to access this material. And so it sets me up in a situation where I'm required to do what that information provider requires. And it's one of these subtexts, right? It's not overt, and it's not even extreme. It's not even, you know, it doesn't have to even be onerous, but it just normalizes that relation. And so that's distinct from the relation that exists between a producer of non-commercial or free material and the consumer of it. And I don't even like those terms anymore, right? I don't like producer consumer anymore when I'm talking about free materials or open learning materials, because really now what happens is we engage in a process of co-creation, not necessarily co-creation in some sort of small group, I had to put that in there, but co-creation where our interaction or our autonomous interactions with each other create something that belongs to both of us and neither of us. And it removes the ownership equation from learning. And I think removing that ownership equation from learning is going to be essential in the long run for providing access to learning for everyone. Even if the learning materials are really cheap, like $1, that is going to create a barrier between potential learners and the materials. So I think we need to understand, we need to move to an environment where we understand that knowledge and learning is part of our common cultural heritage, that it's created by everyone. I mean absolutely everyone in society. There aren't special people who are the creators here. And it's used by everyone, and it's owned by everyone. Until we move into that sort of environment with respect to knowledge, we're going to have the sorts of problems that we have when people are not educated. We have health problems, crime problems, all kinds, productivity problems, if you want to be an economist about it. The whole range of social ills that rise when a population is not able to educate itself to the fullest potential.
I think most of the cyber hippies here at the Webheads and World Bridges would not hesitate to agree with you wholeheartedly. How much do you see administrators and the powers that be getting that?
Well, I think this is the funny thing. I think they get it. And the main response I get from them is that they're powerless to do anything about it. Which, and I take that, that's exactly my point. It's, I only started working in an organization, properly so called, within the last decade. I spent most of my life unemployed. Which is kind of funny, because it really gives me a different perspective on organizations. And what I've seen is that the primary qualification for promotion and advancement into management is obedience. And this is reflected in the behavior of these administrators. They say, I'd like to, but I'm powerless to. And my reaction is, as long as you act like you're powerless, you will be. And things change only when you change them. And I don't go so far as to say, and until then, you're part of the problem. But I sometimes imply it. I probably shouldn't. You know what I mean?
So what do you think of the Athabasca Initiative, Stephen?
I'm all over it.
Can we have a little clarification first? Because I'm sure there are people who don't know what that is. What is the Athabasca Initiative?
Well, and they don't even know exactly what it is. But basically, Athabasca University is moving into the field of open educational resources. I think now they have a certain plan to produce the world's best online courses for free or something like that. But I think that's like an opening position. Like they're starting from what they know. What they know is online courses. And then, of course, we had a really good panel discussion at the CADE conference last week about that. We talked about maybe what their initiative should be is something like open sourcing accreditation. I said that, so that's what I remember. But even the idea of co-producing resources or creating the environment in which people can create their own resources. But it's very open-ended right now. I don't think they know what they're going to do just yet. But I think everything helps, right? The open courseware, that helps. Open universities, open learning, that helps. The stuff that the Commonwealth of Learning is doing, that helps. UNESCO's open educational resources work, that helps. The stuff that Webheads is doing, that helps. Yahoo Groups, that helps. Each little thing helps a little bit. And, and again, it's recognition of seeing patterns, right? You see the pattern that's happening. You see it taking shape where it doesn't matter what the commercial side says. Access to this knowledge will be available for free. And it's just a matter of each person doing a little bit, and over time this accumulates.
I don't know if this is just a U.S.-centric question, but how long will it be until someone can send their kid to college for under $30,000 a year?
Never. because college is about creating a network of elites. And to create a network of elites, you need to create entry barriers. And the most reliable entry barrier when you're creating a network of elites is price tag. has nothing to do with the learning.
It's certainly the best one, because then you get to use all the money.
Well, yeah, so you get to use all the money. But, I mean, you want to keep the poor people out, you charge a high interest fee. I mean, the downtown clubs do the same thing. I remember when I was in Milan, like, you know, middle of the night, all the clubs change, and you get the regular clubs close down, and then these really expensive ones, like $60 for a beer. And you know, what? Well, yeah, that keeps a certain class of people, namely me, out, doesn't it? I couldn't. I still can't believe it's $60 for a beer.
But you don't see some kind of either online or open source university that is recognized as a accredited, viable alternative to spending so much money?
Not properly so-called. I recommended at that panel, and as I recommended like in 1998, the future of online learning, a separation between teaching and evaluation, a separation between the teaching function and the testing or accreditation function. And this is going to happen. When it happens, and it will happen, it's just a question of when. Because it's a really obvious thing. When the government realizes, like, they've spent all this money building, you know, a worldwide information network that at a certain point of time every person in the country can access if they want, which is basically the state we're at in Canada, they realize, you know, we don't need to spend all this money providing learning anymore. People have the capacity, and for that matter, the inclination to do that part for themselves. The only thing keeping them in university, which we're paying $10,000 a head for every year, is the degree, the diploma, the testing. So more and more institutions will be looked at for their testing function, and gradually the testing function will come to outweigh the course function. It's already doing that in some instances where, you know, even in traditional universities, you have this class, the class is entirely online, and, you know, if you don't actually attach participation marks for the online discussion, the person can really skip all the classes, just do the tests and the essays, and they're through. And it, really, the only thing that's stopping them is a question of time and money. So, you know, eventually you come to the question, well, if all they're doing is testing, why are we charging them $30,000? And you realize, you know, you could offer testing for a lot less than $30,000. As soon as that happens, we have a crisis in the university system. All the universities want to jump on the testing bandwagon, which they will, but more significantly, they can't charge $30,000 a year for providing learning anymore. And that's when the universities, properly so-called, will get into the lifestyles of the rich and famous business. You know, the Harvards will create the Harvard Network, Stanford Network, and a lot of middle universities will go by the wayside. A lot of them will turn into testing facilities. And then, you know, it becomes, you know, trying to offer tutoring for individuals, you know, over and above, trying to offer personal services to people rather than services to entire classes. You're appealing, you're not trying to get people into courses and programs, you're trying to sell them, you know, a grocery store full of educational services, some cheap, some expensive, and you just try to create a whole marketplace. That's probably what will evolve. And out of that, it means that if you have the interest, the inclination, and the ability, that you will be able to get a degree for almost nothing, although many people will pay more because they can, and in some cases, they'll need to. Again, chaos and messiness. It won't be a nice, neat system.
And how commonly is this evolving globally? I mean, we have a very global audience here. Are the issues and problems in North America the same as everywhere else, or do you see interesting alternatives happening elsewhere?
Well, you know, I'm not a global scholar, so I can't talk about, you know, what's happening.
You're not?
In this country, what's happening in that country. No, I'm not. There's other people who are much more qualified.
You're just
to
a global
what's
presence.
Happening in different places. I can talk about what I do know. What I do know is, like, in places like Colombia, for example, there's a much greater emphasis on private universities because the state can't support the public ones. It's just too expensive for the state to even think about providing higher education for the majority of the people, and I'm sure that's probably the case in most other countries where there aren't a lot of financial resources available to the government. But then again, it might be Colombia's particular development. Oh, was that the testing thing again?
That was me trying to get control of the Skype cast again, which I have gotten. If anyone there wants to be unmuted, please feel free to ask for Mike.
The flip side is China, which is building a whole bunch of universities. But
yeah.
That's all I know.
And, you know, we spend so much time on EdTech talk shows and in Webhead world talking about how frustrating it is that the new media and the Web 2.0 technologies are not being adapted. And from what I hear, it's even worse at the university level. Has that been your experience as well?
Well, again, you know, I haven't sampled a whole bunch of universities, so again, I'm not the person to ask about this. My perception is that it's worse at the K-12 level, that there's much more blocking happening there, that there's less take-up happening there, because there's more freedom in the higher levels. But that's just my perception. I can't substantiate that with empirical studies.
Okay, I won't ask you too many more questions about things you don't know about. Dave, I just want to check in with you. Are you connected?
I think so. I seem to be coming in and out. I think it's my ISP that's finally tracked me down.
I think so. I think you've been such a troublemaker, they're trying to shut you down.
The man's after me, that's what I have to say. Or the woman.
Did you have anything to say? I would find it hard to believe.
I was going to let you transition this off. Go ahead.
Well, why don't we go ahead and we'll, it'll be a very brief Education Bridges session, and actually it's connected to a lot of what Stephen talked about. You're more than welcome to stick around, Stephen. And I know Chris and Conrad are coming up, and I want to leave a few minutes for that transition because it'll be at TalkShoe, and I suspect people will need some assistance getting there, although we will be simulcasting audio here. Before we wrap up, Stephen, Vance, did you have any final comments?
Guess not.
I guess not.
Well, I just want to say thank you to everybody who's been there in the chat room and online listening. I certainly appreciate the time that you've taken and the discussion that we've had here today. It's been enjoyable for me.
Well, I have my final comments. I finally found the window underneath all those others that would let me unmute my mic. And I just want to say thank you very much, Stephen, for coming and gracing our conference. And this is part of Webheads in Action Online Convergence 2007. It's nice to say where we are, I suppose. And we really appreciate your coming and giving us such a great presentation, because it really was a very nice presentation. And you obviously worked very hard on it, and we appreciate your contributing your time in your typical open source, sharing, caring way. And thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. It's my pleasure.
Always fun, Stephen. Any online events to mention coming up?
Well, let's see. We have...
Well, I was actually talking to Stephen.
Oh.
I so was coming up to go to Webhead.
Convergence mode. Okay, no, go ahead. I'd rather hear from Stephen while we have him here.
Online events. I don't know. I'm busy checking. I've got a couple of video conferences that I'm attending with some organizations in Australia in the middle of the summer, but my events for the next little bit are offline events. A couple of talks in Holland, and then an open educational resources talk in Taiwan, which I'm looking very forward to very much, with the people at OOPS. And what OOPS is a wiki-based translation system for OpenCourseWare. They're taking OpenCourseWare materials and translating them into Chinese. So there's going to be news coming out of that conference, and so I'm going to be very pleased to be there. That's not really online, though.
No, I just want to be able to turn it to, you know, tune into Downs.tv or something.
Yeah.
Just watch you working on code. It'd be very exciting.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I'm sure. People will be lining up to see that, yeah. You can watch me drink coffee, too. I'm sure there'll be a crowd of people there for that. And I'll put the cup on eBay after.
All right, well, thank you again. Always a pleasure. Look forward to connecting soon.
Part of being a good presenter is knowing when to get out. So, I think maybe I should sign off now. But thanks a lot. I really appreciated the time and even the extra time that you've given me. And we'll do it again sometime.
Well, thank you much. And like I said, you're welcome to stay on and listen to us make stuff up for the next 10 minutes.
Yeah, I'm going to listen to the audio stream. I'll get off the Skype so other people can take my place. Talk to you guys later.
Thanks much.
Cheers, Steven.
And in that case, welcome to a very brief Education Bridges Town Hall being webcast live on May 20th, 2007 on the World Bridges channel of the World Bridges Network. This is Jeff Lebo in Bow, New Hampshire.
It's Dave Corbier in Charlottetown, Prince Edward Island.
And we've also got some other folks on the line.
Oh, you mean me? Kathy Shields from Alpharetta, Georgia.
That's Stevens muting and unmuting himself in Abu Dhabi, United Arab Emirates.
I've been a real audio nag to Vance all morning, so
Vance.
But everyone knows I'm a
stickler.
Strict about, yeah, I'm a stickler. Thank you. That's the word I was looking for.
I like the word nag better, actually.
It's probably more appropriate. This is taking place as part of the Webheads in Action Online Convergence, which has just been a whole lot of fun, heading into, I think, hour 65 or something. We've got 8 or 9 hours left. And I wanted to take the opportunity, since we have such a global audience here, to briefly talk about what Education Bridges is, what we do, what we want to do, and how people can become involved. Education Bridges is the educational arm of World Bridges. It is the place where we host EdTech talk shows, which we'll talk a little bit more about. And it's also an idea about how to funnel grant money into people's hands to do good things. Why don't we start with the EdTech talk part, which are the live interactive shows like this that we do on a regular basis. And Dave, can you tell us a little bit about that, where we're at?
Sure. Sure. EdTech Talk is currently, I believe, 7 weekly shows that go on talking about technology and education, and occasionally both at the same time. There are 7 different, almost completely separate groups of hosts who run their own shows and develop their own plans. And they're sort of an independent, in a sense, community of people who are vaguely working together and sharing both skill sets and ideas about how to go about doing that. This is all supported by unfunded Education Bridges, essentially by World Bridges.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm going to stop you there because it sounds like you've gone underwater.
Yeah. In a little tunnel.
Yes, we're a network of live interactive webcasting. We have finely tuned our audio skills, so we produce homegrown webcasting. I just want to check.
Well, you're just nagging everybody tonight.
I am, because
we're tired to hear.
Dave, I just want to check in with you if it got any better.
I'm not sure if it did or not.
It's fine now.
It seems that the longer I talk, the worse it gets. I'm thinking this is sort of a sign. I think you've got a system built in there.
It's a great little plugin I got for Skype. It's called the Dave
That's
Controller.
It's a cool group of folks doing a bunch of really, really good work, talking to people from around the world about their education practice.
So I want to encourage everybody to check that out, to tune into the shows, participate live. There's usually either a Skype conference or a Skype cast, and we very much welcome participation in that. But what I really want to say is we want more EdTech Talk shows to evolve. And most of the shows currently are kind of North American-based, a lot of Americans and Canadians. And they're nice folks, and that's great. But I'd love to see more EdTech discussions from outside of North America. So I want to encourage anybody who is interested in hosting that kind of show or participating significantly to let us know. You can email us at edtech@edtechtalk.com. There, you'll need to learn a little bit about how to webcast, and we've set up the webcastacademy.net to help facilitate that. And coming up in a few hours, we're also going to have a Webcast Academy open house where we talk more about the technology involved. Dave or Kathy or Vance, anything else we want to say about the shows that we do?
Just a second. My talk shoe is acting up here. I can't do both. Okay. Yes, I want to say that I've been an intern since the fall and for Webcast Academy, and I've just met a lot of people online and made a lot of connections with people throughout, you know, North America, primarily also other parts of the world, and it's been really exciting. So for me, it's been like a portal. It's been a real eye-opener, and I just love the support of this community, because anything that you need to know, want to know about using technology and as it relates to education, there's somebody who is in this group that you can make contact with, and they're going to be happy to help you.
Thank you, Kathy. I mean, because I think that's the biggest value, I think, of the kind of shows that we do, is it allows you to connect with people who are working on similar things, encountering similar challenges, and for a lot of people who are kind of the lone Web 2.0 person in their school, it can really be encouraging to connect with other people who are dealing with similar issues.
Exactly.
In a sense, I think what we have is what Stephen was talking about. It is the networked group of people who are actually learning from each other. And I feel like this EdTech Talk really is my learning environment.
Yep.
Yeah, I would agree.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's also indicative of the way the community is going, the way people have pitched in, say, on this convergence, where you've got a three-day webcast-a-thon, and you don't really have to stay up for it all the time. It's just obvious that, you know, the people that you've trained are getting back into the community. And that's, I think that must be very gratifying for you.
It is. The army is growing. And, you know, I diabolical laugh here. No, I mean, it gives me hope. You know, it's very easy to get discouraged and frustrated with all the new technology and all the systemic challenges that are out there. But connecting with people, collaborating, and getting things done is just a really encouraging, hopeful experience. So I would encourage anyone to stop by. The other part of Education Bridges we wanted to talk about quickly is the grant thing. And this is something we have been talking about for quite a while and have made some progress toward. And I'd be very interested in kind of discussing the global aspects of this. Dave, if your audio is okay, can you tell us a little bit about that part of Education Bridges?
Sure. That idea of Education Bridges is to bring in larger amounts of funding from the nonprofit organizations who are currently giving it out for education right now, and then doing a sort of micro-grant model where teachers, individual teachers or small groups of teachers who are looking to do interesting, innovative educational technology projects have a place to go where they can step around some of the politics that might restrain them in their local districts or serious financial difficulties that might restrain them. It's a chance of having, as Stephen would say, a non-corporate group to go to that's only agenda, really, is for the information to be open. So it's I got a text message this morning from somebody who was looking to do what I think is a really compelling project. We have access to this massive group of people who are involved with EdTech Talk that we can help people form the communities they need in order to be able to get their projects moving forward. So Education Bridges, in that sense, is an attempt to help the community work together and find a way for them to get funding to do interesting and innovative projects.
Because along the way, we've realized there is a lot of money out there. A lot of grant money being thrown at projects that don't necessarily produce a lot of value. Yet, $1,000 in the right hands can make a real difference. Mm-hmm. And so figuring out how to facilitate that is what we're aiming for.
Are there people, Jeff and Dave, who, I don't know, have aside from just people like me and in individual schools that have thought of maybe smaller scale projects, are there people who have kind of a list of projects that they think would be great to do that we might be able to look at and get ideas from?
Dave?
I'm thinking about that.
Yeah,
a list of projects that...
Well, maybe some successful projects that have happened at other schools that, you know, if we knew about them and thought, well, they've used that model, it works, and if I could get a grant, I could do it at my school, that kind of thing?
The only... This is maybe a dodgy answer, but the only list I think of is the last 300 shows we've done. When you listen your way through it, the people mm-hmm. who come on, I mean, I think of the guy who's the principal of that school in the States where they've essentially rewritten. Yeah. And he's an extreme example.
Mm-hmm.
But there have been a lot of people who've come on the show and said, listen, we're doing this interesting project, and this and this and this and this have happened. We did not write those down, unfortunately. Anybody who'd like to go back through those 300 shows and write them down.
I know.
It's almost as if they could have a special tag for that, you know, for projects that are like that, and then we could just search on it and boom, we'd come up with a big list.
And for now, educationbridges.org is the hub of this project. And I believe people can register and submit grant ideas there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of the stage we're at, is trying to build a list of the kinds of grants that we'd like to fund or the kinds of projects we'd like to get grant money to fund. So please head on over there. That's another Drupal site. Register, comment, post, and let us know if you're interested.
Wow, that was 10 minutes, Jeff. Well done.
Yeah, well... That new Dave controller helps keep us very brief. Yeah, so right now, most of our shows are on in the evening time in North America. So that's about 0100 GMT or 2300 GMT, some of them are on. That's not true. Alex and Arvin, they're on 1730 GMT. But again... If you're at all interested, do let us know. We'd love to have, at one point we're going to have EdTech Talk UK. We'd love to have EdTech Talk everything. So thanks very much for listening to our little town hall. Questions at edtech@edtechtalk.com. You can also leave us a voicemail there or comment on the website. Any other closing thoughts?
I've really got to fix my audio.
Yeah, Dave really needs. We need some money. Do you need money? We can make a little micro grant.
Have we just gone to post show?
Yes.
Is this the post show? How long is the post show?
Well, it's actually more of a segue to the next session because I have a feeling people are going to have a little challenge getting into the talk show, or some of them will. And I need
is that
to
coming up.
Yes, in
I
9 minutes.
It's already
goodness!
I suspect it's already active. I want to get those links on the front page.
Yes, you're right. Oh, I thought it was in after the. Okay, well, anyway, so, how does one do that?
TalkShoe is I don't think they've got their VoIP thing working yet. It is,
they say
you have to phone it
in.
Yeah. You can use Skype to do that, but it's going to
cost you.
Charge you if you don't have the unlimited North American dialing. What I'm going to do now... is sign in.
You're going to stream it, right?
Yes.
You're going to stream it, and what would there be to see? Would there be nothing to see, or there's a slideshow or something?
Well, actually, there is. They have a very unique chat interface.
Mm-hmm. With TalkShoe.
Yes, with TalkShoe, which we should be able to Yugma.
Okay. Well, that'll be good. Maybe
and
I'll just...
Theoretically, I could probably Skype people in, but I don't know if that's worth the effort.
Mm.
We'll see how things go.
Oh, I could just listen to one.
There would be no one to nag you about audio.
That's true. That's true, yeah.
See that everything's running smoothly so far,
eat
and
dinner
I see
or something.
That we have more participants.
Eat.
This is getting more and more exciting.
Oh, sorry, did I...
Yes, I see,
reveal the bodily function or something like that. I'm sorry. I'm trying to sit here and be professional and stay awake.
What I'm going to do now is change my microphone setup so that you'll no longer hear from me, but people
Chris,
in the
I'm
Skype
sure
call and the
this,
Skype conference will be able to hear the talk show.
Right now. Patricia,
so
if they
hear
is my
and
wife.
Hear the talk
so,
show.
If she, if that is she correct. Starts making very congratulatory and supportive comments, you know, please be aware that that we're married.
Okay, well, I'll flag her and make sure we don't get any comments from them.
yes, let's do that.
My wife also works here at my university, and we go to meetings. We have a different last name, and so we go to meetings, and some people who don't know sometimes find themselves saying something they wish they hadn't. But in the end, it's, we try to make sure people know that we're related.
Yeah, it was. It's interesting, actually. I got an email a couple of weeks ago from Quentin D'Souza, who just asked, you know, I keep seeing your last name, in all kinds of places, and but the first name is different. So, is there any relation? And of course, I had to confess. But Patricia just posted a text message saying I will be very critical. So maybe I shouldn't have even mentioned her presence here.
Too late.
Okay, we have 6 minutes. We have 6 minutes to go, and it's encouraging to see that the number of participants is increasing. I was a bit concerned initially about the fact that while talk show I believe is a really neat tool, it also requires you to create a password and download a desktop client if you want to participate in either the chat or to actually sort of phone in and be part of the talk cast. So I thought that some people might find it a bit discouraging, but I'm happy to see that there are participants here, and I'm sure that we have I hope that we have more listeners listening to just the live stream.
Yes, I saw a text message just pop up from World Bridges saying that they are streaming it over there as well.
Wow. Okay, that's very interesting. That's very interesting because I have no idea how they're able to do that. But I'm glad they are doing it. That's wonderful.
Yes, indeed.
Yes, it is magic. Thank you, World Bridges. Magic this morning, ladies and gentlemen, has been brought to you courtesy of World Bridges. Thank you very much. I know that TalkShoe will, once I click the record button, it will start recording our presentation, and then once we're done, once the session is terminated, the audio will appear on our presentation page on TalkShoe.com. Within 30 minutes. So I know that will be done automatically. And also, those of you who do have usernames and passwords, you will be able to leave a comment on our presentation page. I think they call them reviews, not comments. But if you're so inclined after the presentation, if you'd like to write a review or leave a short comment, we would really appreciate it. That. Okay, I'm just going to, since we have 4 minutes left, I'm going to close some windows that I definitely won't need. I'm hoping not to have to multitask during this presentation. So I'm just closing some windows right now, making sure just the most important ones are open. Here I'm just looking at the Webheads in Action chat. I'll probably post. Why don't I post another reminder? And we'll begin in about 3 minutes.
All right, sounds like a plan.
Chris, still there?
Yes, I am.
Just a quick sort of question before we begin. I decided to give all of our listeners an update on TalkShoe.com and how to use it, how to log on. I'm assuming we have some people who are just listening, so why don't I explain just briefly how to log on and create a username, password, and how to participate in this. In this talk. Is that okay?
Absolutely.
Okay, good. I'll try not to take too much of our time. Okay, and I guess I'm forgetting what we decided about who will be responsible for explaining the format of the presentation. Do you want me to do it, or would you like to explain that?
Well, what I have here in my notes is that we'll do some introductions, and then you can talk about, I had you next talking about TalkShoe and how to use that and access that, and then I would go back to setting the stage, and then we'd get rolling.
Okay, perfect. So I'll do that. So right after we do our introductions, I'll talk about TalkShoe, and then maybe briefly mention the format, and we can move on. I'll mention the PowerPoint as well.
Okay.
I think it's important. Okay?
Great.